Wonder vs Nihilism, which is better? Copyright Copyright Cupid Eros, February 22, 2020. Words, 2267. Currently, most definitions in the Dictionary 2020 describe nihilism as the delusion that things, or everything, including the self, do not exist, a sense that everything is unreal. Hold that thought for a second. I went to the library the other day. I am always at the library in one way or another because I find wonder therein. And that wonder I find is very real. I can feel that wonder. I am amazed at that wonder. For example, I went to the classics bookshelf and picked up a book. The type of book poetry, prose, history, science, anthropology does not matter. I picked up this book, say, poetry, and opened the page willing and opening myself to some joy when suddenly all the alphabets started falling out of the book. Not only the black alphabets but words, too. Falling one after another, the words, pulled by gravity, tumbled through the air and landed at my gym shoe feet. You can imagine the horror I felt, the utter nihilism, at the sight of the little helpless, broken words, jutting out, at random perpendicular angles. The pile of information was no longer applicable or discernible. One needed to be a genius to put back all those classical, poetic and wonderful words at my feet. Quickly and carefully, I spread my feet so as not to endanger the creatures. That's how precious alphabets and subsequent their word equivalent held for me. This probably was a fluke. A lazy book repairer in the stitching department, I surmised. So, carefully, I opened the book to another section. Holding the page edges of the book tightly, I began reading, when the same thing occurred again. It didn't take long for my logic to urge me to replicate or repeat the terrible experiment by flipping more pages. One after another, the alphabets slipped right off the white page, their crazy glue unable to hold them bound. Words broke apart, and it is always tragic when the word low VE breaks in two. Low dropped away together as if holding on to some unicorn hope of finding its partner VE. VE lost without meaning and unable to procreate or propagate is a better word, because the ending of a word has the responsibility of assigning a deeper meaning. Yes. Keen as I was to the love poem, I started reading only to find it breached birthed right before my eyes. I looked onward at another pile of meaningless, collection of ideas, rules, visions, constructs, and broke off the establishment of authority and institutions. Soon, the words fell out between the pages, not even open. The classic poetry book grew lighter and lighter as its contents emptied on the library floor like spilled pressed licorice. Oh, the tasty bunch of letters, my tongue never got to savor, nor my eyes to read. My ears locked in the sound of silence as the message written in excellent books, before they began to be scrawled on subway walls, finished their skydiving to the floor. In a nihilistic panic, I flipped page after page, one at a time at first, then two at a time, three, my finger skipping through a blank book. I shut the book, but it was too late. Knee-high black ABCs and broken words lay at my feet. Even the words from the front and back covers dropped away in despair. All that was left was nothing. A blank book. And that's when I spotted the wonder. Regardless of the intentions of the author, I might start fresh and build another beautiful poetry book. But that is another phase in the journey from nihilism to wonder. I'll talk about it later. For now, the quest centered around getting the words back on the pages. To my chagrin, a particularly woke person, lesbian trans drag keen story reader with a dash of gay and 666 binary person walked up and offered to help. Only in the clown world does such a slipshod identified person randomly show up to help bring about order. I braced myself for round two of nihilism. She went inside her purse and pulled out a plastic rectangular of white clay. In minutes, this woke being fashioned the exact replicated size of the poetry book, and she bent down and mashed the clay onto the pile of desolate words and letters. Her method brought about life, sort of, to the ABCs and words. Each hoping to be carefully laid out on a drawing table backlit, as for exquisite architecture or drawing work, and carefully be assembled together for the page. No such luck. She identified the mash of words as particularly useless anyway, and therefore whatever order, the clay page stickiness took, that arrangement fits best. She asked me for the book. I resisted. She tore it from my hands and gave a clown's laugh as she mashed the clay back onto the center pages dividing the book. How this carefully put together woke being came to consider the words belonged in the center, when previously they fell from several pages at once, if you had been listening clearly, was beyond me. The first principles and still broken words moaned. I mourned. Undoubtedly, this was how the clown world worked in action. Actively busy all the time, bringing about an order that is nihilistically no proper order at all. More and more rectangular blocks of white clay she produced from her woke purse as she fixed, page after page of mashed little black letters, and snap-chatted words together. This did not bother the fully identified woke individual. After completing her work, she handed the book back to me with a smile. Good as new, she exclaimed and picked up her purse and walked away. Now, I remained skeptical the words or letters landed in the right places at my feet, hence my skepticism increased when I began reading on page 1. No doubt somehow, the word introduction came out right, but the next word, clown, said it all. Standing there in the library, I knew the staff stood little chance of fixing the problem, as I noticed all the black letters and words, even the conjunctions, and, but so forth which worked to hold ideas and concepts together fell on the beige carpet floor. The books all looked as if they'd went on an anorectic diet. The bones of the book's spines, covers, and blank white pages left alone to read. Back to an earlier point, nihilism's antidote is wonder. When society reaches the end of its journey into the underbelly of neglected, elegant ideas, they eventually crawl out if they survive. Such a time occurred a while back. You call it the radical 60s, but actually, it was what the young people called flower power. The flowering age of wonder. This occurred through an explosion of great music. Music not like the nihilistic music of today, I might add. Music is another wonder. Art, architecture, film, dance, literature, nature, even childbirth are wonders. People who cannot accept the reality venture emotionally into the underbelly of nihilism. Life has no purpose anymore. You see, this is why religion exists. Religion exists as a bulwark against nihilism that is bound to happen over time. Some people cannot create unless they destroy, but having destroyed, they do not remember how to create. What tools do they have to create again with? What is their grand vision for their woke being small limited brains? What religion provides is a grand vision, a grand gesture. Man is more than an ape. If a man was only an ape, he'd never venture into nihilism in the first place. Man's capability to see the worst he is capable of becoming remains insight of the deepest kind. The ability of man to see around the corner from nihilism keeps him focused on future potential. A person gets up in the morning, not so much because of what he did yesterday, but what he may do excellently today. And to do that each and every day, one needs wonder. People who want to create these safe spaces, and put everyone in diapers, from the teachers to the generals, scientists to bloggers, create nihilism. People who want everyone to be perfectly equal, in fact, in reality, create nihilism. People who espouse communism, socialism, and their ilk, hate speech, feminism, gayism, transism, drag queenism, lesbianism, perfect equalityism, binderism, leftism, woke commercial, and movies, and whatever else twisted out of their woke imaginations produce nihilism. Women feminists will never be happy because they reject the wonder of motherhood and the feminine. The engineer with a superior skill who knows he can never make more cash than another engineer of lesser quality will journey into nihilism. Or in pragmatic terms, the superior skill engineer will give up producing. In a similar vein, Mgtao's concept of the red pill is under attack because it exposes female nature. Something here too is hidden under layers and layers of worshipping women rock songs, romantic movies, poems, books, packaging men and women to the great breeding high ground nature ultimately wants is wonder. Nature wants descendants, no matter the cost. Nature does not care if a man is not an ape, but a thinking, reasoning being. If it did, nature, God, whatever is driving, nature, natural law, certainly reconsider its actions. When a man discovers women operate under a biology imperative, much like the Star Trek Prime Directive, do no harm to your future childbearing, child-raising capabilities. Female Prime Directive reduces men to resource-walking coinage. No love exists on her part. This fierce bending toward nature is countered by one thing, religion. Usually, one tries to install ethics, values, good reason to stop this female prime directive, but they fail. Only religion holds this feminine prime directive in check. Some may say, in what way? Think Proverb 31. Every religion has to contain the thought spirit or Jezebel spirit threatening to break out. Every society that fails this test dies. Not to worry, another society will replace it, much as Rome was replaced. This is the nature of the battle of God against nature. God's purpose is to drag man upward out of his tacit animal nature. Nature's mission is to keep the people coming, being born. What a man ultimately wants is to have a YouTube wife. That is a woman at her intellectual and reasoning best, rational, capable of holding a substantive conversation. But, alas, those skills stopped being taught to women long, long ago in the Victorian age. That training came from the Bible, albeit watered down. Now, women train themselves in GSSRM, gossip, shame, shit test, rumor mongering, moan, and bitch about everything. Women have descended into word salad tossing, think Pretty Little Liars TV series with loose ends, no conclusions, bad writing, complaining, gossiping, whispering negatively against others in order to get everything material thing they want in life. The days when a woman quietly sat by her husband and watched his favorite movie or science show disappeared. Hopefully, not forever. The first thing a woman wants to do when entering a relationship with a man is to harm him using her mouth, shit testing, and thought, shit testing, mind. Word salad GSSRM produces nihilism in the personal relationships between men and women. GSSRM does not, as women think, produce wonder in the personal relationship between men and women. This thought mind is not submissive, and that causes deep problems in the realm of sex, but that will have to be for another blog. Hence Mgtao. If an Mgtao person no longer feels life has a purpose, you need to introduce them back to a sense of wonder at being alive, music, humor, sex, art, dance, literature, film, travel, nature. This is the reason for the arts' existence in the first place. Remove all of the arts, and you destroy society. Even communist countries had to replace the art destroyed with their own communist version of inspirational art. Yes, nihilism can be beaten by wonder. And the world is a strange place filled with wonder wherever you choose to look. Sometimes, it can happen in a library when one is browsing through the history, anthropology, or poetry section. You never know where wonder plans to emerge since it is deeply held close to the chest of the living gods. A pretty girl's face arranged ever so slightly different than all the other girls' beautiful faces. Or the discovery about a process of mechanization, like a bowling alley. Perhaps, how a CD is cut or watching a high-rise grow up a little bit each day. That grass growing out of the middle of a crack in the concrete. The stars and pictures of the universe. Our Earth view from the moon or space station. Wonder comes in all sizes for each of us to choose which best fills the nihilistic missing pieces. Maybe a quote from someone you did not know or even hated. Nietzsche's quote, "That which does not destroy you makes you stronger," for example. Or the riddle of steel. In a Bicerianism, it is the riddle of the active will and the humble spirit. Back to Nietzsche, I personally have my problems with Nietzsche boy, he was all over the place on concepts. And those that the gods will destroy they first drive mad, and the mad will generate nihilism. Want to know what crawling out of nihilism looks like? Simply go look at a dripped painting on a floor canvas. The mess is ridiculous, until if you keep staring, staring, something slowly materializes, a wall in the brick. Each brick building upon another and another until at last, one accepts the fact life is a grand experiment to raise the level of a man's soul. Wonder recognizes and respects equal opportunities and resists equal outcomes. 1,000 trees shaped the same, bearing the same shade of green and blooming the same flower is nihilism. Wonder produces the Übermensch. And the Übermensch produces wonder. Such is the nature of man when he overcomes his ape-like tendencies. Better yet, the man who refuses to accept Darwin's theory that man is some kind of ape evolving to destroy those around him to survive. Apes cannot wonder as a man can. Apes do not have the soul a man has. Embrace your soul if you would escape nihilism, is a second step to be paired with the first. And wise is he who knows the first true step into wonder.
Intermission. Title: A Closer Look at Two Interview Questions. Word Count: 981. Summary: A job interview is stressful. The person who hasn't made a lot of changes isn't practiced at what is involved, nor should they want to be, and the person who has made a lot of changes doesn't have any idea as to what's involved either, or they wouldn't be making so many changes. Preparing for the interview distresses the situation considerably. Yet, 78% of all candidates, regardless of the level for which they are interviewing, wing it. And frequently cause themselves. Keywords: interview, job, resume, recruiting, hire, career, candidate, employer. Article body: a job interview is stressful. The person who hasn't made a lot of changes isn't practiced at what is involved, nor should they want to be, and the person who has made a lot of changes doesn't have any idea as to what's involved either, or they wouldn't be making so many changes. Preparing for the interview distresses the situation considerably. Yet, 78% of all candidates, regardless of the level for which they are interviewing, wing it. And frequently cause themselves to be weeded out in the process. Like so much of the interview, seemingly innocent questions can trip you up. You think you are answering them in a way that puts you in the best light, but you'd be surprised at how many people completely miss the boat. Merely to hope an interview has a positive result is not enough. That's basically forfeiting your ability to drive up the percentage of a positive outcome. For instance, in response to the question, "Why do you want to work here?" Some people will say things such as, "I've worked in this industry for 15 years and been very successful. I feel I can make a difference in your organization. I have a proven track record of leadership. I've read in the paper that your company is having some problems, and with my experience as a director of XXXXX, I can help straighten those out." Quote, that answer may sound good and appear to suffice, but on a scale of 1 to 10, it ranks about a 4. Why? The answer shows no research, no thought, no consideration. It sounds stock and could suffice for any number of companies. Overall, unimpressive. In my experience as a recruiter, I've found that while mid-level management tends to under-answer the question, upper-level management will often over-answer the question. One group doesn't provide enough information because of a limited lack of experience. The other group has been around, worked their way up the ladder in more than one company, and in their attempt to sound thoughtful, intelligent, and wise, end up saying very little at all. Let's look closer. Why do you want to work here? Here's where you get to show off your research. Tell the interviewer what you've learned about the company, and why it's appealing to you. Specifics are the key here. Relate those specific examples from your experience to what you've learned about the company, their focus, and their market. Look to your personality and what motivates you and how that relates to any details you learned from the ad, your recruiter, your friend who referred you, or from where you learned of this opportunity. For instance, perhaps their ad stated that they were looking to establish a marketing department from ground up. If you thrive on growth, challenges, making things happen, there's your answer, along with examples of how you have grown, established, or done market research in a parallel situation. And you might ask, what if it's not a high-profile company? What if it's on the small side and local? Right. Not every company is the size of General Electric or even a regional public powerhouse that you can look up in Dun & Bradstreet. But most librarians are more than willing to help you find any information that might be present in any of their research books. Local newspapers may have done stories on the company, and the library would have those too. And these days, most companies have a website. Share what you can do and why you feel you can make a contribution and benefit the company. This question is about how you can benefit the company, not how the company can benefit you. Tell me about yourself. Some interviews are lost right at this point. This is not an invitation to go on ad nauseum about everything that has happened to you since you were 5 years old or since your first job out of college. Nor is it the time to shrug your shoulders and give an unplanned, one-sentence answer. Some people, especially those who haven't prepared and have a tendency to talk when they get nervous, find themselves rambling. Put together a nice little 2 to 3 minute verbal bio about your career, your qualifications, and why you are interested. Know what you're going to say in advance. A few points to remember. In recruiting, we used to say, A, candidates for, A, companies, B, candidates for, B, companies and, C, candidates for, C, companies, and A, B, candidate is not only someone whose talents and track record is only so-so, it's also an, A, candidate whose poor interviewing skills make him A, B. Single quote. Knowing who you are, what you want, what you have to offer and what you've accomplished, and having it all on the tip of your tongue, can make or break you for a job offer, not just for your perfect job, but sometimes for even finding any job. Being able to sell yourself, your skills, how you can benefit a potential company and then being able to close the deal necessitates taking the time to research and learn the company. It means knowing yourself well enough that you can apply aspects of your capabilities to the individual facts and details of that individual company, and that you can do it smoothly without groping for words or just winging it. And last, but not least, the words of Peter Handel of Dale Carnegie Training echo the importance of interview preparation, including what strikes most people as silly, role-playing. But as he said, you only have one chance to make a really good impression, and if you don't take it seriously enough to study and thoroughly prepare, someone else will, and that's the person who will get the job. Do your homework before every interview. There's no chance to make a second good impression. Intermission. Title: 3 Positive Steps to Discover the Purpose of Life. Word Count: 709. Summary: If your life is not as passionate as you would have liked it to be, if you lack the zest and energy for living, it is because of the lack of an underlying principle around which one's life should be organized. The process of discovering this underlying principle may be the most powerful thing you will ever do yourself, because it will give your life a direction, a purpose. It will provide you with the clarity and focus that could awaken the unbelievable forces hidden somewhere deep inside you. Keywords: hypnosis, hypnotic, hypnotism, hypnosis techniques, hypnosis training, self-hypnosis, learn hypnosis, hypnotic mistress, hypnotic submission. Article body. In this article, we will discuss the concept of life and its underlying principle. We will be going through a step-by-step procedure, exploring your feelings and options, and by the end of this article, you should have a fairly solid tool you could immediately employ in your life to give it a meaningful direction. There are 3 steps to the process of discovering the purpose of your life. Understanding the principle of choice. Creating your underlying principle. Aligning your life with the underlying principle. Understanding the principle of choice. Norman Vincent Peale has this to say about the power of choice. The greatest power we have is the power of choice. It is an actual fact that if you have been groping under unhappiness, you can choose to be joyous instead. And, by effort, lift yourself into joy. If you tend to be fearful, you can overcome that misery by choosing to have courage. The whole trend and the quality of anyone's life is determined by the choice that are made. Choosing is the most important activity of your mind, because by making a choice, you are proclaiming your desires to your subconscious mind. Once the subconscious mind get to know your desires, it is going to do anything to manifest them in your life. The choices you make in your life become your goal. And, if you are sincere in pursuing them, there is no reason why you should not accomplish them. Indecision, on the other hand, not only creates frustration and anxiety, but can also confuse the subconscious mind about what you want. But it is important that the choices you make are made by you, in accordance with your true desires, purposes, and aptitude. A lot of us let others make choices for us, or make our choices according to what we think is correct, even if that means that we go against our wishes. What is right for someone is may not be right for you, and the way to know this is listening to what your heart says. So, begin with, make a list of things which interests you. Things which you have always enjoyed, which makes you feel better, which inspires you to surge ahead, no matter what obstacles you face. Do you like doing something creative, or something artistic? Do you enjoy nature? Do you like the sea? Do you enjoy helping others? Do you get pleasure out of making a difference in other people's life? Whatever it is that interests you, go ahead and make a list under the following headlines. Things you love to do. Blank, underscore, blank. What is it that you love in this thing and why? How you could do this for money, and make a living out of it. Blank, blank. Creating your underlying principle. The next step is to examine the list you just made and find out if there is any recurring them. Maybe, it is the contribution that keeps coming up, or an effect to seek or give love, or helping your parents cope with old age. Whatever it is, try to identify the central them of the things you love to do, and try to put it in a short and precise statement. This will be your mission statement. It may even be a quote by a famous person, or a philosophy that has influenced you. Of course, as you grow up, this statement could evolve, but its soul will remain the same. Now, write down your mission statement, aligning your life with the underlying principle. The final step in this journey is to map your path to your ultimate purpose. Make the little changes in your lifestyle that would accommodate this principle in your life. Live this principle each and every day. It might take a few days, but you will certainly feel the difference in your enthusiasm for life. If you realize that you love being amidst nature, plan out your holiday. Maybe an outing with your children could be enough to recoup with your energy. On the other hand, you might even want to change your job, or start a new business, that is more in line with your mission. Remember, do what you love, and money will follow. Intermission. Title: 5 Powerful Reasons Why Inspiration Should Be a Part of Your Success Strategy. Word count: 479. Summary: let's face it, life can be difficult. It just can be. Work pressures mount, family demands become overwhelming, health suffers, stress builds. This article shows you how to surround yourself with inspiration and keep your life on track. Keywords: inspiration, success strategy. Article body: copyright 2006 Carrie Vollmer. Let's face it, life can be difficult. It just can be. Work pressures mount, family demands become overwhelming, health suffers, stress builds. I have to admit, it happens to me, and when it does, when life gets to be too much or too hard, I put up a closed for business sign and seek out a little inspiration. Inspiration looks good, a beautiful photograph, smells good, a bed of roses, sounds good, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and feels good, family photographs, your favorite movie or book. Surrounding yourself with inspiration helps you get and keep your life on track because it returns you to your spirit, to your center. When you feel inspired, it's a sign you're touching a place deep within yourself. From this place, you can create, plan, and simply live a life that feels better. And when you feel better, everything runs a bit more smoothly, creativity increases, things get done, you feel happier. 1. Inspiration is heart-opening. Think about the last time you read an inspiring story. Did your heart feel 10 times bigger than normal? Inspiration opens your heart, and when your heart is open, you become more accepting of yourself and others. You feel more patient. Your general outlook improves. Connecting with your heart reduces stress. 2. Inspiration inspires greatness. Have you ever seen a beautiful painting and had the urge to stop by your nearest art supply store for a canvas and oil paints? Inspiring works of art touch within us our innate desire to create art that's unique to us. Art equals an outward expression of your deepest joy. 3. Inspiration calms and restores nature. Fresh air, wide open spaces, sunny, hot beaches. Don't you already feel more relaxed? Exactly. Mother Nature is ready and willing to share her inspired works of art with us. She's made it highly accessible and totally free. 4. Inspiration energizes and refreshes. How did you feel watching Lance Armstrong win the Tour de France for the 7th time? Did it make you want to jump on your bike for a 2,400-mile bike ride on steep mountain roads? Maybe. Did it make you want to do something greater with your life? Inspiration is powerful because it touches the part of us that knows, deep inside, we're made for so much more. 5. Inspiration spreads joy. Inspiration makes you feel good. Just think of the last inspiring chain email you received and passed on with a note that said, "I never do this, but I had to share this with you." When you feel good, when the joy in you comes alive, and you share your joy with others, you impact the world in 1,000 positive ways. The next time life feels difficult, put up a closed for business sign, and get out for a little inspiration. You'll love the results. End of CupidErosBooks.com Wonder vs. Nihilism Podcast. Thank you for listening.